It's like go to Premanandi.
Namaskrityam naram jaiva narottamam devam sarasvatim vyasam tato jayamudirayet.
Before beginning this recitation of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, I offer my humble obeisances to Naranarayan Rishi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and topmost human being, to Srila Vyasadeva, the author of the Srimad Bhagavatam, to Mother Sarasvati, the goddess of learning.
Nashta prayeshva badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavat yutama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki.
By regular attendance in classes on the Srimad Bhagavatam and by performing devotional service to the pure devotee who embodies the Bhagavat principles, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving devotional service unto the transcendent personality of Godhead is established as an irrevocable fact.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today we are reading from the 10th canto. Which chapter is it?
64.
Finished 64 yesterday? So we're on chapter 65?
Should be.
This verse is from yesterday? It says Sunday on here?
Yep.
Hunty, Sunday.
What to
you? Okay, I'll do the verse on the board in that case. Text number?
35.
Okay, should I finish the chapter today? It's a small bit. Okay. Text number 35. This chapter is the deliverance of King Nirga.
Brahmasvam duranu gyatam.
Brahmasvam duranu gyatam.
Bhuktam hanti tripurusham.
Bhuktam hanti tripurusham.
Rasahya tu balad buktam.
Rasahya tu balad buktam.
Dasha purvan dasha paran.
Dasha purvan dasha paran.
Brahmasvam duranu gyatam.
Brahmasvam duranu
gyatam. Bhuktam hanti tripurusham.
Bhuktam hanti tripurusham.
Prasaya tu balad buktam.
Prasaya tu balad buktam.
Dasha purvan dasha paran.
Dasha purvan dasha paran.
Brahmasvam duranu gyatam.
Brahmasvam duranu gyatam.
Bhuktam hanti tripurusham.
Bhuktam hanti tripurusham.
Prasaya tu balad bhuktam.
Prasaya tu balad bhuktam.
Dasha Purvan Dasha Paran. Dur Anugyatam.
Not given proper permission.
Buktam.
Enjoyed.
Hanti.
Destroys.
Three.
Purusham.
Persons.
Prasaya.
By force.
To.
But.
Balat.
Resorting to external power.
Of the government, etc.
Buktam.
Enjoyed.
Dasha.
Ten.
Purvan.
Previous.
Dasha.
Ten.
Aparan.
Subsequent.
Translation. If a person enjoys a Brahmana's property without receiving due permission, that property destroys three generations of his family. But if he takes it by force, or gets the government or other outsiders to help him usurp it, then 10 generations of his ancestors and 10 generations of his descendants are all destroyed. Please repeat. If a person enjoys a Brahmana's property,
without receiving due permission,
that property destroys 3 generations of his family. But if he takes it by force, or gets the government or other outsiders to help him usurp it, then 10 generations of his ancestors and 10 generations of his descendants are all destroyed. This is the purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It's very short.
Sridhar Swami.
According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Tri Purusha refers to oneself, one's sons, and one's grandsons. Yeah. So I'm going to read to the end of the chapter because there's just a small purport before the end of a few verses. Text number 36. Members of the royal order, blinded by royal opulence, fail to foresee their own downfall. Childishly hankering to enjoy a Brahmana's property, they are actually hankering to go to hell. For as many years as there are particles of dust touched by the tears of generous Brahmanas who have dependent families and whose property is stolen, uncontrolled kings who usurp a Brahmana's property are cooked, along with their royal families, in the hell known as Kumbhipaka. Whether it be his own gift or someone else's, a person who steals a Brahmana's property will take birth as a worm in feces for 60,000 years. Convinced yet? I do not desire Brahmana's wealth. This is the Lord speaking. Those who lust after it become short-lived and are defeated. They lose their kingdoms and become snakes who trouble others. My dear followers, never treat a learned Brahmana harshly, even if he has sinned. Even if he attacks you physically or repeatedly curses you, always continue to offer him obeisances. Purport. Lord Krishna offers these instructions not only to his personal associates, but to all those who claim to be followers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 42. Just as I always carefully bow down to Brahmanas, so all of you should likewise bow down to them. I will punish anyone who acts otherwise. When a Brahmana's property is stolen, even unknowingly, it certainly causes the person who takes it to fall down, just as the Brahmana's cow did to Nirga. Purport. Here, the Lord demonstrates that his instructions are not theoretical but practical, as seen concretely in the case of Nirga Maharaj. In the final verse. Having thus instructed the residents of Dwarka, Lord Mukunda, purifier of all the worlds, entered his palace. Thus in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada to the 10th canto, 64th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Deliverance of King Nirga. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha.
Before beginning to speak on the subject matter of today's verse, I would like to offer my humble obeisances to all the devotees who come to Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir, and to the servants of the deity here, and to Sri Sri Radha Vallabha, Sri Sri Gornitai, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. It's very nice for me to come here for a spiritual holiday, and I'm very honoured that I've been given the opportunity to say something about the Srimad Bhagavatam and share my meagre realisation of what I've captured from my spiritual master. So I pray that I will be able to say something that is of use, and that I will become purified by speaking this morning, and that you will all please forgive me for any mistakes that I make. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was preaching so strongly about Gaudiya Vaishnavism that he was causing a great disturbance amongst the Brahmanas of the time. This was in the early 20th century. So they invited him to come for a debate. And they were going to have a debate about the relative position of a Brahmana and a Vaishnava. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he manifested a pastime that he was actually too ill to go. He was in bed, maybe he had a cold, something like that, he couldn't get up. So he said to his son, Bimala Prasad, who was known as Saraswati, and who we know as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, you please go and you represent the set in the debate. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta went there and he delivered a paper which he had authored called Brahmana and Vaishnava, available in the temple gift shop for $15. Definitely recommend for everyone to read it. If you've read Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, then you should also read this treatise he has written, Brahmana and Vaishnava. In the first half of the treatise, he spoke very eloquently about the position of the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas had spoken first, actually. The Brahmanas, they got up and they quoted so many verses from the scripture in glorification of the Brahmanas, establishing that the Brahmanas are the most worshipable persons, every dear to the Lord. And so then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta got up, and he started his speech, but instead of presenting that no, Vaishnavas are better than Brahmanas, he started off by glorifying the Brahmanas. And he even glorified them more than the Brahmanas did. He was quoting more verses from more places and different points, and the Brahmanas were all sitting there going, hey, this is pretty good. You know? If you've ever distributed books on the street, sometimes devotees explain you should try to get people to say yes, 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 like that, you know? Then when you say, and would you like to take a book? And they say, yes, 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 I'd like to take a book. So Bhaktisiddhanta was glorifying the Brahmanas, and these are some of the verses that he was citing here about the glory of the Brahmanas. Then he went into the second section of his presentation, which was about the Vaishnavas, and how glorious the Vaishnavas are, and how dear they are to the Supreme Person. So Brahmanas are definitely very dear to the Lord. Brahmaniti Brahmana. The Brahmanas are exclusively engaged in activities of transcendence and devotional service. And they act as servants of the society by helping to connect people with spiritual life. So in that way they're very dear to the Lord. Just as we have heard over the last 2 days since I've been here from Gangeshwara Prabhu and from Devaki Mataji about the glories of the Brahmanas and how dear they are to the Lord and why they are dear to the Lord. So here we're hearing about what happens to someone who steals the property of a Brahmana. In the Manu Samhita, there are different prescriptions for sinful activities or improper activities and how people should be punished. Manu Samhita is a guidebook for rulers. And it tells how different people should be punished for different things. And sometimes people should be executed for different activities as a punishment, in order to help them to get rid of the bad karma, and so that they can have a fresh start, and to protect society from them. But even for activities which involve execution for most people, Brahmanas are never to be killed. Other punishments include fining people and taking all their wealth away from them, but Brahmanas can never have their wealth taken away from them. The only thing that you can do to a Brahmana is exile him from the kingdom. He can be sent out of the kingdom, but he has to be allowed to take everything that he owns with him. The king is not allowed to confiscate anything from him. So Brahmanas are given special treatment all the time. Even when a person comes from a Brahmana family, but is not really acting as a Brahmana, still he should be respected as a Brahmana. The reason for this is quite simple. If we allow the government, or the government, the ruler, to say, oh, this person is not a Brahmana, therefore I no longer treat him as a Brahmana, I'll take his wealth away from him, then it opens the door for unscrupulous kings to say, oh yes, this person is not a Brahmana, and take his wealth away from him. It's like we see something similar to this happening in some of the Western countries today, where the government has decided that it can revoke a person's citizenship from them, and say, you are no longer a citizen of this country, you have no rights, we will now put you into a prison, and you are not allowed to get a trial, and you are no longer protected. So the Manu Samhita specifically says that this type of ruling is not allowed to be done. And Hiridananda Das Goswami and Srila Prabhupada have made this point many times, that the animals are also citizens of the country. So we have started off with the animals, we take away their rights, and we put them into prison camps, and then we just start extending that to people now. Where will it end? You know, if we allow animals to be treated in this way, then eventually we will start to be treated in that way ourselves. Just like we heard yesterday from Devaki Mataji, she said that one of the symptoms of an educated person is that they treat others the way that they want to be treated. So if we treat animals in that way, what is that saying? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. How about this? Do unto lower forms of life, or do unto dependents as you would have done unto you by a superior force. So if we have the superior position of force and we will exploit the animals, what will happen to us when people have a superior position? Well, we will also be exploited. How can we complain about that? We have also taken part in the same thing. We're simply reaping what we have sowed. So for Brahmanas, they should be treated very specially. Brahmanas, yeah. There are different types of people. Some people are Brahmanas, and some people are not Brahmanas. Different types of people. Four different types of people, broadly speaking. They're called Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. And these four different types of people are represented in every society in the world. Everywhere you go, you'll find these people. Just like in the body, naturally, my body is producing all the different cells that I need, automatically. I don't have to think. I eat food, and then the food is automatically processed by the body, and the cells come out. You know, there's hair cells come out, eyes, hands, you know, fingernails. It knows what to make and where it should go, automatically. So in the same way, there is something called the social body, which we are all part of, which means the human society. And automatically, material nature is producing all the needed parts for the human society to work perfectly. In the human society, we need people who can provide guidance and vision. We need people who can direct and organize things. We need people who can perform economic functions and do economic development. And we need people who can do work. So therefore, the material nature creates all the different bodies of these different types. So sometimes we hear that a devotee is not a Brahmana or a Vaishya, a Shudra or a Kshatriya. And that is true. Actually, the spirit soul is completely transcendental to this material world. The Lord Chaitanya, he said, maybe someone knows the Bengali, I'm not a Brahmana, I'm not a Sannyasi, I'm not a Grihastha, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Shudra. Does anybody know that verse? Anybody knows? Nishudraham, Navipraham, something like that. But I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis, I think it's that verse.
You prakhi sanyasi, gopi pad kamanda dasandas.
Yes, thank you, Prabhu. Yeah, it is the verse. He says those things, I am not any of those things. At the same time, if we look at how Lord Chaitanya lived, he acted most of the time as a Brahmin sannyasi, didn't he? For example, he preached to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he preached to Prakashananda Saraswati, who were both very high-class Brahmins. But he didn't preach to Jagai and Madai, because such a contact between a high-class Brahmin sannyasi as himself and those type of persons was inappropriate socially. There's one exception to that, which was the pastime with Ramananda Roy, and it is explained there that when Ramananda Roy's entourage saw this effulgent Brahmin sannyasi embracing this person from the Shudra class, they were very much bewildered and struck with wonder. So it shows that that is an unusual pastime. Lord Krishna himself, he acts as a Kshatriya. And he explains in Bhagavad Gita that even though I have nothing to obtain within the three worlds, still I follow my duty for the purpose of demonstrating to the common people how they should act. So although a devotee is not the body, still the body exists. We understand that we are spirit soul and that we are eternal and that we are temporarily associated with this particular body. In my past life, perhaps I was a woman. Perhaps I lived in another country, or maybe I was an animal, who can say? Something else. This life I happen to be in this body, sitting here, speaking like this. It's a temporary situation, but it is real. It's temporary, but it is real. Temporary does not mean false. Sometimes impersonalists, they say, Jagat Mithya, Brahma Satya. This world is false, and only spirit soul is real. But we do not agree with that. We say that this world is temporary, but it is real. That's why we're sitting on this side of the room, and the ladies are sitting on the other side of the room. Yes, we are spirit soul, but we have a body. And so we act in terms of that body. I remember one senior devotee, I'm not sure who it was, he said, this idea of saying Vaishnavis, that is a speculation, a concoction. There is no Vaishnava and Vaishnavi. A Vaishnava is not designated according to the body. So you cannot say that there is such a thing as a Vaishnava and a Vaishnavi. And at the same time, we do see that we have a men's toilet and a women's, you know, a men's bathroom and a women's bathroom, and we go to the appropriate one. So that demonstrates to us that while the body is temporary and we are not the body is still real and it affects our experience in this world. So although we are not, I'm not this body, I'm not a Brahmana, I'm not a Shudra, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Grihastha, I'm not a Sannyasi, a Brahmachari, any of these things, still, we are in this situation, and so we should understand what the situation is, and we should use it appropriately. Understand what the thing is, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe, Yuktam Vairagya Uchite. Understand what this body is, and use it properly. The different types of bodies are born with different strengths, different abilities, different areas where they can offer service to the whole community. Each of us has a different strength which we can offer to the community. Some people are very good at speaking and thinking. Some people are very good at organizing and directing. Some people are good at making money and money-making schemes. Some people are very good at working, have a very great strength there. So I refer to those people as individual contributors rather than Shudras, because the word Shudra has almost a negative, it has acquired a negative connotation. I'd like to read one verse from a purport from the second canto, the first canto, second chapter, where Prabhupada talks about this Vanashram system. Srila Prabhupada says, in the best interest of human society, there must be such divisions of life. Otherwise, no social institution can grow in a healthy state. And in each and every one of the above-mentioned divisions of life, the aim must be to please the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. So we each have a way in which we can do that. This institutional function of human society is known as the system of Vanashram Dharma, which is quite natural for the civilized life. The Vanashram institution is constructed to enable one to realize the absolute truth. It is not for artificial domination of one division over another. When the aim of life, the realization of the absolute truth, is missed by too much attachment for indriya priti or sense gratification, the institution of Vanashram is utilized by selfish men to pose an artificial predominance over the weaker section. So it really begins with the human beings artificially predominating over the animals. In the Bible it says that man has been given dominion over the earth. So when you have a very nice understanding of things, you think, well, that means that I have to look after the earth. I'm supposed to look after it. You have dominion. You're responsible for it. You look after it. But the demonic mentality thinks, great, now I can really exploit it. I'm in charge. I can do whatever I want. So first we start off with that attitude towards the animals. Then it goes to the people as well. And the brahmanas are the head of society. So they're supposed to give guidance to people. But when they become too much attached to sense gratification, then they start to lord it over everyone. And that was kind of the problem that was happening at the time that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta went to the debate and spoke about Brahmana and Vaishnava. The Brahmanas had become overly proud of their position. This is the weakness of the Brahmana. It's actually a weakness of all of us that we become proud, isn't it? As soon as we get some little thing, immediately we become proud of it and think, wow, now I'm so great, you know? You want to become a good devotee, but then you become a good devotee, you know? As soon as you do something well, immediately you become proud of that and then again fall down. This is our problem of everyone, but especially the Brahmanas, this is their weak point. The Brahmanas, and also the Kshatriyas too. That's their weak point as well. These people have these strengths and abilities. If you don't apply your abilities in the service of the Lord, you'll never become purified from this, and you become even more proud. But you know, there's another side to being proud. Sometimes we are overconfident and overproud of our abilities. That is called the fault of ativyapti, overextension. But then there is the mirror image of that, avyapti, underextension, where we become falsely humble. We become famously humble, even. I'm not just humble, I'm the most humble. So one time, one devotee, he fell down on the ground in front of Srila Prabhupada and he said, oh, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. And Prabhupada said, you're not the most anything. I can just imagine, I don't think it happened quite like this, but I can just imagine Prabhupada whacking him with his cane saying, get up, you're not the most anything. So sometimes we can be a little bit like that. We're a little bit unrealistic about what we're actually all about. The other day I was speaking with one devotee and he was saying to me, I'm so fallen, I've got no good qualities. And I said, no, you have some good qualities and you have some not good qualities. Be real. It's no good to be either overly confident and saying, I'm the best, I'm so great. And it's no good either to be saying, I'm so fallen, I'm good. Because both of those are masking the same thing, which is being unreal about your situation. So it's good to become real about what we're actually about and understand ourselves and where we fit into the bigger picture. Because Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the bigger picture. And it talks about the Brahmanas and how we should treat the Brahmanas and how the different people should interact with each other. But if we don't know where we fit into that, it's pretty much useless to us, isn't it? It's like if I'm lost in Melbourne and every time I go out of the gate, I get lost. I don't know why. It's like, it's because the temple has all these different entrances to it, and every time the devotees take me out, we go out a different one. And then all the streets look the same. They have these little houses all jammed next to each other. And it doesn't matter how many times I go out there, I can never find my way back. So if I'm out there and the devotees give me a map and say, well, look, here's a map of the city, it still doesn't do me any good because I don't know where I am. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is like the map of the universe in life. But if we don't know where we are in there, then it's still not so much use to us. So in the beginning of devotional service, it's all about finding out actually what you're all about. It's about discovering yourself. And that's why it's called the science of self-realization. It's about understanding what we're all about. And so that is the purpose of being engaged in devotional service. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the yogis, abandoning attachment, act with the mind, the intelligence, the senses, and even the body, solely for the purpose of purification. So that we're doing some service, but we're not simply being engaged in some service to attain some external goal. We're doing it to become purified and to understand ourselves. Just like you might take a stone, a dull stone, and then rub a knife against it, and the knife becomes very sharp. Similarly, by putting ourselves in devotional service and rubbing against other devotees and rubbing against ourselves and our limitations and our abilities, we discover ourselves. That's what the process of devotional service is about. It's about self-discovery. So we shouldn't become upset that someone's telling me to do something or asking me to do something, because it's actually the opportunity for us to discover what we're all about. And then we can really find ourselves in the Bhagavatam and understand where our strength lies and what our special contribution is that we have to make. So the interaction of the different types of people is explained in the Bhagavatam. In this pastime, we're hearing about King Nirga. He was a king, and he used to give away a lot of charity because he was a Karmakandi. Sometimes we call people Karmis, you know, say, oh, the Karmis. King Nirga is a Karmi. Most of the people today are not Karmis. If they were to be anything, technically we would say they are Vikarmis, because they are engaged in activities which are absolutely no good. Or even Ugrakarmis. Vikarmi does things which are very bad for themselves. Ugrakarmis do things which are bad for themselves and bad for others. But a Karmi, a person who follows Karmakanda, he follows a very strict program designed to elevate him to the heavenly planets. What he does is he gives lots of charity, he opens hospitals, he digs wells, he plants trees, he sponsors people, he sponsors feasts and all these kind of things. But his goal in doing this is to elevate himself to the heavenly planets. That's a Karmi. He's a very, materially speaking, he's a very nice person. And that was what King Nirga's program was. He was doing that. And he was a king. And he gave away cows and charity to brahmanas. So many, hundreds, thousands of them. But what happened was that he gave these cows and charity to one brahmana, and somehow one of the cows wandered back into his cows, and then he gave it again to another brahmana who came, without noticing. And he found out about it only because these two brahmanas came and they were both very angry and they were arguing with each other, saying, no, the king gave this cow to me. And the other brahmana was saying, no, the king gave the cow to me. So then they went before the king and they said, what is this? You have a cheating mentality? You're giving this cow twice in this way? So then they became angry and they cursed him, actually. So the anger of a brahmana is a very potent thing. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta in his Brahman and Vaishnava, he says the anger of the Brahmins can make the oceans boil. Their anger is so powerful. So actually the relationship between the different types of people should actually be based not on lording it over each other, like I'm so much better and I'm going to lord it over, but it should be based on mutual respect and service. Because the different types of people have different strengths and different things that they can offer to each other. And when we discover what our contribution is to make, we can offer that to other people and we can value them for their contribution. Like Srila Prabhupada would say, you know, it might be explained in the scripture that the individual contributors, the shudras, that they are like the legs of the body, but if there are no legs on the body, what are you going to do? It's not that, you know, we should say, oh, the legs are no good. No, the individual contributor is a very valuable person who has a very valuable contribution to make. So mutual respect and service. So the brahmanas and the kshatriyas, they have respect, mutual respect for each other, because they understand what each of them can offer. Yesterday we heard from Devaki Mataji about the day before, I missed the class yesterday, I was away. And the day before, Chanakya Pandit, a brahman, who was an advisor to King Chandragupta, who was a kshatriya. So what Chanakya Pandit would do was he would offer advice to King Chandragupta and make him more effective. That's what the kshatriya is after. He wants to be more effective. That's what he values. He respects effective people. You can, as you're performing devotional service and getting more of a sense of yourself, some of the ways that you can kind of discover a little bit about yourself is you can look at the people that you admire. Who are the people who you admire that you look up to? And what is it about them that you admire? Do you admire powerful people? Do you admire learned people? Do you admire people who are very good at getting things done? Do you admire people who are very good at speaking? Of course we admire everyone for what they have, but some people we admire a little bit more than others, and sometimes we think, gee, I wish I could be like that. So the king, he wants to be effective, and so the brahmana, he helps the king to be effective by giving advice to him. Yeah. The way that the brahmanas influence the kshatriyas is not by like getting up on a high horse and telling them what they should do. Once they start doing that, then they get thrown out. And it goes from being a theocracy to being a monarchy. See, when the brahmanas are kind of influencing things nicely, everything is very God-centered. Once they start getting up on their high horse and saying, I'm a Brahmana, therefore you must worship me, everybody, I'm the most, you know, I'm the most. then the kings say, hang on, I don't need this guy telling me this. And then they exile him, cut off his head, whatever. And then he says, okay, now it's my program, and what we're going to do is we're going to attack this other kingdom, and we're going to take it over. And then they just start expanding, and it turns into a massive empire. Then after a while, the Vaishyas are there, and they're going, why is this guy making so much taxes for us and taking all our money? We don't want this guy in charge anymore. Then they throw him out, and they stick a parliament in control, and then they start turning the whole thing into a massive commercial enterprise. And then they start colonizing other countries, and it becomes a massive commercial expansion. Then the workers go, these people are just exploiting us for money. We don't need this. Then they overthrow the government, and they make it into a communist state. And then everything falls to pieces completely. So that's how the whole thing gets started. So the Brahmanas, they don't influence the Kshatriyas in that way. Don't ever try to get in front of a Kshatriya. What are the qualities of a Kshatriya in Bhagavad Gita? Anyone knows?
Courage and battle. Courage and battle.
Heroism. Courage and battle. Yeah. Tejas. You don't want to get in front of that guy. Because he's, look, it's like this. There's a situation going down, a fight starts, you know, and everyone's like, oh my god, what am I going to do? The guy who jumps in there, he's a Kshatriya. You know, everybody else freaks out. He immediately attacks. So you don't want to be in front of that guy. He's the guy who kicks the door down, the guy who leads the charge. You need people like that, because they'll inspire the others and everyone will follow behind him. Well, they'll follow someone to do it, but they won't start it themselves. But don't even try to get in front of that guy, because he'll go right through you. You get out in front of the Kshatriya and say, stop, stop. And he just goes over the top of you. The way that the Brahmanas influence the Kshatriya is they get behind him. And they say, my lord, I believe that you would be more effective in attacking this other kingdom if you did it in this way. Well, perhaps you could consider this strategy. Like this. And the king goes, okay, we'll give it a go. So he tries it and it works. And he goes, yeah, that was pretty good, you know. And everybody's like, all hail the great conquering king. And he's like, yeah, you know, he's out there in public taking the adoration like that. Then he goes back and says, you got any more good ideas? and then the Brahmana goes, yes, you should renounce sense gratification. Understand that you are the spirit soul. So he will listen. That's how you influence the Kshatriya. Because we have different needs and we have different abilities and they match together. Different people have different psychologies. So we heard that, you know, one of the symptoms of an educated person is that they treat everyone the way that they want to be treated. We have to be a bit intelligent in understanding this, because not everyone wants to be treated the same way, isn't it? How do I want to be treated? I want to be treated the way I want to be treated. So that means that you should treat other people the way they want to be treated. Treat everyone the same by treating them differently. Of course, we have samadarshanaha. We see that everyone is spirit soul, but at the same time, we understand that while the body is temporary, it is real. So that means that while we treat the devotees in one way, we treat the dogs a different way. You know, we might invite the devotee to come in for the arati and to take prasadam, but we don't invite the dog to come in. So although we see them all as spirit soul, we treat them differently. And each devotee is a unique individual. So we have to treat them all differently. Yeah, and we have all different relationships between us. So that's quite an art, actually, to learn how to do that. And, you know, we have to be a little bit tolerant while we're all learning this art. We're all together here learning about ourselves and learning about our relationship with the Supreme. And that's the goal of our activity here. And all the activities that we're engaged in here are helping us in that ultimate goal. They all serve that central purpose. So we should be very careful not to offend one another, and also not to take offense. We should be very tolerant. What does it say? More tolerant than a tree. Not to offend one another and not to take offense from one another. Very careful to understand how valuable each person is. Each person has a very, very valuable contribution to make. In fact, The person who is the individual contributor, or known as the Shudra, just for those of you who are into team building and things like that, if you're building a team, that's the first person that you need to get. Someone who can actually get something done, who will actually, you know, put the rubber to the road and do some work. Those people are so valuable, and they are so, in a sense, they're so powerful and influential in what they can do. Some people can, lots of people can do things that I can't. I have a couple of very close friends in Brisbane who are like that. They can do things that I couldn't even dream of doing. They can do, cleaning a kitchen, for example. I can clean a kitchen very nicely, like to a very, very excellent standard of cleanliness, and it will take me about 2 days to do it. These guys can go in there and just hammer it, and it takes them 2 hours. I go in there and I'm like disassembling the stove and cleaning the inside the mechanisms, and look, there's some dirt under there, and taking it out. These guys just come in and just go like a whirlwind over the whole thing. The dishes just disappear. They've got like a mystic potency that enables them to do it. So I got a lot of respect for that, because if we didn't have people like that, then we'd be in a lot of trouble. So everybody is very valuable. Everybody has something. And we have something, each of us, that we can offer to others. And so we should respect each other for our differences, and we should try to find out what it is that we have to offer. And I think that you have a very wonderful opportunity to do that here in Melbourne. This is... I've come here myself to recharge my batteries. I live in Brisbane, and it's not often that I get to come to such a wonderful temple and an atmosphere as a spiritually surcharged, and see such an organized situation and an organized endeavor for people to come together, to care for one another, and to find themselves in the association of devotees. So for me, it's really inspiring to come here and see all of you, and to take part in this. And I hope I've said something that's of use to someone, or if nothing else, that will maybe purify me a little bit. But I think that just by sitting here in front of you all, I'm feeling purified, seeing the faces of all the Vaishnavas. So Brahmanas are very important, and Vaishnavas are even more rare than Brahmanas, and everyone is so valuable. So, does anyone have any questions or comments? Something to add, expand on, Prabhu?
What are the conclusions that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati did in that book, Brahmanas vs. Vaishnavas? What are some of the salient points?
Well, his conclusion is that the Vaishnava, he cites many verses which state that the Brahman is a dear to the Lord, but then he goes into a massive preponderance of evidence that shows that the Vaishnavas, the devotee of the Lord, is the most dear to the Lord. Yeah, he has two sections, Prakritajan Kanda and Harijan Kanda. The second half is the Harijan section. So a Vaishnava can be anyone. You don't have to be a Brahmana to be a Vaishnava. To be a Brahmana, you have to have certain abilities and a certain nature. But to be a Vaishnava, you don't have to have that. Just like our very first official saint of ISKCON, Jayananda Thakur, who Srila Prabhupada said he has gone back to Godhead in this life. And he said that we should observe his appearance day with a half-day fast, and that his picture should be displayed on the Rath Yatra cart. What was Jayananda Thakur known for? Humble service, yeah. Taking out the rubbish.
Driving taxis. Doing everything.
Yeah. He wasn't known as a great scholar or, you know. He was just known as being a humble servant.
Very encouraging also. Very encouraging to everyone.
Very encouraging to everyone. Yeah. So all of these qualities which are there in at least the latent form in a Brahmana are also the qualities of a Vaishnava. These things come out. And that, in the case of Jayananda Thakur, he wasn't by nature a Brahmana, and yet he manifested all these wonderful godly qualities. So a person who's a Brahmana, in one sense, we can say that they have a starting advantage. But then there, the trap that they can always fall into, of course, is pride. But for everyone else, there is no, you know, everyone, we all have something that we can offer to the Supreme and in service of the community. And so when we do that, then we become Vaishnavas. Yeah. Prabhu?
Normally what I notice between these points is that and naturally I'm sensitive to this because of my position, but devotees who have positions of responsibility in administration and management suddenly become relegated to the level of Kshatriyas. And, you know, then as a result of that they are less appealing. Or certainly not as good as the Brahmanas. And of course, those who are in the administrators, they're Brahmanas. Or at least they're Vaishnavas. And of course, they're better than Brahmanas. But certainly better than the administrators, you know, which it is called. And so therefore, they think then that, or there's a mentality that exists in camps, can develop, you know, that somehow or other, you know, the administrators are motivated people like Chuck is. You know, they're only interested in position and power. They're not really interested in the well-being of the devotees. So therefore, you know, the person's in the management position becomes sort of like a lesser being within society.
Yeah.
I see it manifesting in different pockets, in different places from time to time. And if you look at how Prabhupada dealt with the devotees, he didn't actually see it like that, because he saw the devotees, all of the devotees, as being Vaishnavas. And he also saw that those devotees who had taken on responsibility within the organisation of this time as being essential for him to be able to have his mission be successful. So he actually gave those devotees, he did give those devotees problems. But somehow, you know, over time or whatever, that those positions have lost their lustre. You know, they haven't quite got the sheen about them.
Yeah.
Of course, mistakes have been made. And that's not to say that anybody who is in a position of management has been affected by, you know, position and power and all that sort of thing. But I've noticed there has been this sort of this erroneous idea that, you know, somehow there are Brahmanas within Islam. And the Kshatriyas and whatever, the Shudras, I suppose. That there's a lack of or loss of respect. Sometimes, not always, but it can manifest just in mind.
Yeah.
But it's erroneous to think of the devotees in terms of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, you know, Shudra, like that. It's actually erroneous to think like that. And rather, we should see the devotees as Vaishnavas first. That's what we should be saying. And then, okay, some of us do have administrational abilities. Some of us have more political qualities, perhaps. So therefore we engage people according to those natural propensities. But just because they're being engaged in those natural propensities doesn't mean now they become a lesser person. They're still Vaishnavas. And we should respect that, as we practice. Learn to respect them. The qualities of the devotees and the engagements that they have, rather than thinking, oh, he's an administrator, therefore he's a judge, and therefore he's less than me because I'm a Brahmin.
Yeah, it's like the point that Prabhupada made, that without the legs or the arms, the body will become useless. So every part, every function is important. And I was saying at the beginning that relationships between people of the different types is characterized by mutual respect and service, that each one has an ability that they can offer. Just like I was thinking about, I've been thinking a lot about the classes that I've been hearing here, because they're very wonderful speakers here. And in Devaki Mataji's class, she was saying that Brahmanas, they don't want the position or the power that an administrator or a Kshatriya has. And then I was just thinking and thinking about that, and I was thinking, yeah, that's true. But then there's one other thing that the Brahmana doesn't want, and that's the responsibility that the Kshatriya has. You know, a person who's performing that role, because of course they're just, ultimately we're eternal spirit soul and we're just playing a part as a servant of the Lord. And so, yeah, persons who do take on that responsibility like that, they have to have some, either they have to have some natural ability that they're born with, or else they have to be such an advanced personality that they can actually transcend their actual natural, the functions of their body. For myself, I'm still quite limited. Like these guys who like attack the kitchen and totally, they don't demolish it, but they reconstruct it and clean it up. I still have difficulty doing that, and I wouldn't be able to do that day after day. That would be very difficult for me. I've actually tried it. I tried, you know, doing pot washing at Govinda's and stuff, and I can do it for a while, but then I start to flake out. So now I try to kind of, I still do, you know, some service in that way, and it's very difficult for me actually to do that. But I go there with my wife. She's very good at it. She cooks at the Govinda's, and so I go in with her on Thursdays and go and wash the pots and clean the kitchen there. And it's, you know, materially speaking, I don't really enjoy it, but there's such a taste that comes from serving the Lord. It doesn't matter what you do, actually. When you're doing devotional service, it gives you some spiritual taste. Prabhu?
Another point.
Yeah.
If administration and management wasn't important, then why did Prabhupada spend so much time organizing it? And administration is gone. He wasn't at Uttima, Paramahansa. But he placed so much emphasis on that service. In fact, he would say, okay, I'm retiring from management.
And then he'd come back.
An hour later, he'd get a bail from somebody and then he'd be back into it again. And everybody would say to Prabhupada, you know, you said you were going to retire from management. Then he said, oh, I can't.
Yeah, without effective management, for example, we wouldn't be sitting here in this situation right now. You know, this temple exists in the material world in Australia because of effective management, and that's vital for giving shelter to the living entities. Without the Kshatriyas, there's no one to give protection to the Brahmanas, to the Vaishyas, to the Shudras, to the animals, to anyone. No one can be protected. It's an unenviable position in a sense. Sometimes we like to think about the demigods, you know, and their opulent, that they have such great opulence. And I got a realization about that, you know, because they asked me to be in charge of a small temple in one country for a couple of years, and I did it. And then at the end of it, I was just thinking, you know, those guys must have to have that kind of opulence, because otherwise how can they hack it, what they have to do? So, and you know, the thing is that in ISKCON, it's not that you get to become an opulent, you know, you don't get to become a great opulent demigod. You get to be a humble servant of the devotees, and you get to be criticized for it on top of that, you know, unappreciated. So after I tried doing some little thing like that, I've got a great deal of realization about how important that is, how difficult it is, and I've got a lot of respect for people who do it effectively and over a long period of time.
I'll comment. Maharaj Munya was actually a devotee in that he engaged in a lot of Karma Kandya activities. But what happened was, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, he got the blessings of a devotee that one day he would meet the Lord. And so it mentions that. And from that time on, he was very eager there, for that time. And when he was cursed to be a lizard, his thought was, when will the Lord come so that I can meet him? So he, you know, by his piety, if you like, he was always serving the Brahmins. But because the Vaishnavas are also Brahmins, and he got to serve a Vaishnava one day. This is the potency of the Vaishnava. Right? And then, as a result of that, Sukriti, that Agyata Sukriti, or unknowing wise activity, that he got to serve a Vaishnava, he got the blessing of the Vaishnava. And then that meant that one day he was, you know, well, he was liberated eventually too, to enjoy the results of his pious activities by being pulled out of the world by Krishna. But he says, I remembered that benediction that I got from the Brahmana or from the Vaishnava person. And then I was always thinking, when will Krishna come? When will I meet Krishna? It was interesting. As a result of his, I guess he was a very pious man, as you say, a karma. Kanda, he was a karmi. Not a big karmi, but a karmi. But as a result of that, he got the blessings of the devotee, and ultimately got the mercy of Krishna. So after that point in time, because of that association, he actually became a devotee.
Yes, a very nice pastime, this one. It what you just explained, Prabhu, it echoes that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, it's a purport actually. Srila Prabhupada says the actions of a person in Krishna consciousness and a person who's not in Krishna consciousness appear to be very similar externally, but there is a vast gulf of difference in the consciousness between them. I remember my spiritual master, he explained to me once, he said, the thing is that when you're doing something as a service and according to, as bhakti yoga, it looks like externally like you're very much attached to what you're doing. It's not that you're kind of externally renounced and detached. No, you look like you're just fully into it. But the difference is that when you get an instruction from the Lord or the spiritual master to stop that activity and do something else, you give it up just like that. But in the meantime, you look like you're just right into it, And both King Nariga and King Chitraketu, they got cursed in this way, but the way that they took that curse shows that there was a difference in their consciousness. And I think the other thing that demonstrates is that as devotees, it's not that we just say, well, I'm a devotee, so therefore, I'm above rules and regulations and everything, and so I don't need to do anything good. Just like King Nariga was a good person, so also people should think about the devotees as being very good people. Just like when we were on Harinam last night, every time we went past the horses, Anirudha Prabhu would tell everyone to turn the kirtan down and we'd go down very quietly and go past. So I'm sure that people really appreciate that and respect the devotees as, integral members of the community here, the wider community in Melbourne, and that they are sensitive to everyone here. So people should think of devotees as being gentlemen and ladies.
And that set of white horses that Bill told me has been away for 6 months. She said they were okay before with the kirtan, but now because they've been away from the mountain city for 6 months and they haven't heard the kirtan so much, she said that one on the right hand side was about to explode. She said,
with ecstasy.
I took the card over and said, well, we prefer not to see the card kicked on the way to quiet kirtan.
Prabhupada expected the devotees to become accomplished in many areas, even though they may have a particular propensity. Encouraged devotees to be expert and have a broad range of skills. And I remember hearing from one of the Prabhupada said that in the morning I give the Bhagavatam class, in the afternoon I go to the bank. It was made it very practical that devotees should be multi-skilled and do practical service. As you find as your devotion in life goes on, you'll be expected to take on more responsibility generally. And it requires a multi-skilled approach. And some things you may be good at, some things you may be not so good at, but you still do them anyway. It's very difficult to become completely accomplished in all areas. But I think one statement by Prabhupada made was that Vaishnava means expert. Becomes accomplished in many areas.
Yeah, as Srila Prabhupada put it, do the needful. That was his tagline.
I can't clean the kitchen as well as Prabhu does, though. He's one of these guys who gets in the kitchen and
it's mystical, isn't it? I don't know what it is. Mystical ability.
Empowered.
Dave?
Just thinking about quite that we're all born lower than Sudra in Kali Yuga. And if we have a society that's maybe all of us are aspiring to be Brahmins, Will we have any sudras or vashas to do anything else? Like, I'm thinking once it was a census done on Govardhan, and you were to write down what propensity you thought or what caste you thought you fit into, and everyone wrote down Brahma. So I think we can have a society of Brahmins, but who's going to milk the cow, or who's going to, you know, play the field?
Yeah.
So should we be Vaishnavas and do everything, or just think that I'm just a Brahmana, or I'm just a Sudra?
That verse from, I think it's in the 11th canto, Kalo Shudra Sambhavaha, that in Kali Yuga everybody is born, is by birth a Shudra, according to the, and it's a fact, because the whole family structure is being destroyed. Normally you can get an idea of what someone is by the family that they're born into. You know, and, but even so, just as I was explaining in the beginning of the class, just as my body produces the different cells that are needed for the different parts, the material nature produces the different personalities who are needed for the functioning of the social body. There are some people who just do not like to give class. They just don't like it. And then even after a long time of doing it, and they keep doing it, but they just don't like it. Then there are other people who just like, they'll just talk at a moment's notice and keep talking forever, you know? And There are other things, like some people find it very difficult to get up in the morning, some people like to do deity worship, some people like to do the kitchen, they really like it. Other people, it's very difficult for them, they'll do it, but it's difficult for them.
I'm supposing the question is, do we need that holistic society, like we need a working class people, you know, people who are going to work in the fields and things like that, for it to work, and then it's like that's the international system, we've got our, everyone in their proper places.
Can I answer to that? How does the, like they were saying, you've got people who, devotees who seem to predominantly have a Brahminical mindset, how does that integrate into the wider society? Is it necessary for the Vaishnava society to include all of the elements, or is that something, is it kind of a Brahminical organisation that can integrate into the rest of society?
Well, the activities that we perform, like what we just did this morning, the morning program, the mantra meditation, the Guru Puja, the Kirtan, these are all, in quotes, Brahminical activities. These are the kind of things that the Brahmins do. But at the same time, you know, in the Vedic civilization, the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas are all twice born. They all wear a thread. They all undergo the Upanayana ceremony, and they all do deity worship. Of some kind, you know? They do some kind of yagya or something like that, and they study the Veda. And the general mass of people, they also will go to a temple, something like that. So with all the people who are coming, we engage everyone, we engage ourselves in these activities. And then at the same time, there is some natural, like Jayananda Prabhu, he had, you know, you have some natural area where you're very strong, and that's what you're going to be well known for. Another way you can understand really what your real nature is what's your reputation? What are you known for? Some people are known, you know, for making money. Or another thing is you listen to what people talk about. You just listen to their conversations over time and you just pick out the themes that keep repeating. You know what? We could turn that into a business. We could make a lot of money out of that. You know, the mind just immediately goes there and starts thinking like that. And, okay, you know, that's how the mind thinks. So other people, you know, their reputation, yeah. What are you well known for? That gives you some hints as to what you're... I don't like to talk about castes and classes and things like that. I just like to say that we all have different strengths and abilities that we can offer. And it's not that everything's black and white. You know, when it says that your body is and your mind are composed of the three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance, it's like a graph with three axes, and you have a certain amount of goodness, certain amount of passion, certain amount of ignorance, so you're kind of around this area here with your body and your mind. So it means that you have certain abilities. Yes, everybody's good at thinking. Some people are better than others. Everybody's good at singing. Some people are better than others. Everyone's good at cleaning. Some people are better than others. So each of us has a particular profile, an individual personality. And when we kind of understand where our strengths are, we can contribute those strengths to the common cause. And we can appreciate what everyone else can do, appreciate them as individuals. I just like to approach it in that way. Prabhu?
The example I gave yesterday was the cricket team. And the fact that, you know, the opening batsman shouldn't be criticised because he's a terrible bowler. You're a lousy bowler. But yeah, he is a lousy bowler, but the reason why he's on the team is because he's a good batsman. And you have your all-rounders, and you have your, you know, your fast bowlers who use the lousy batsmen. You know, when they get into bat, that everybody laughs. When they hit a run, the guy didn't get it done. So, you know, the members of the team are exalted, if you like, because of the contributions that they bring. In relationship to David's question about, you know, are we a Brahminical culture? And so therefore that's our role within society. Not everybody within ISKCON, unfortunately, is, as you say, Brahminical. But of course that doesn't mean they don't have a contribution to the whole running of the institution. But certainly ISKCON as an organisation, as Prabhupada said, you know, his mission was to give society a head, right? And a voice, if you like, of instruction, of spiritual guidance, of leadership, based on spiritual values, coming from Brahminically qualified devotees. So, you know, Prabhupada did want us to cultivate Brahminical culture, if you like. And, you know, we do that, like I say, through the morning program and you know, study of the scripture and deity worship and training and all these things. So within ISKCON, our base culture, if you like, is Brahminical. Although actually it's not Brahminical because it's actually devotional. But it looks like it, you know, it has the elements of essence and goodness in it. That's why it's considered Brahminical. But as you pointed out, all of us do the morning program. We do, you know, we do food and so forth. So we all do the Brahminical things. But some of us will be more inclined and have those qualifications of Brahma, if you like, as opposed to the others who won't. In fact, there'll be a less quantity of those people. Probably explains, you know, the usually less certainly it seems like that in our society.
That's natural. That's nature, yeah.
That's natural. So, you know, do we integrate with society? Yes, we do. And we do it in such a way so that we engage everybody in the Brahminical culture of devotional service or the, you know, the Sudhasattva. Sattva and Sudhasattva. That's what we're engaging people in. But at the same time, we also realise you can't shove a round peg in a square hole. And so therefore we engage people according to their natural propensities. And that was Prabhupada's move. You know, not that we, you know, cookie cutter slap the Varnashram system on everybody. Okay, you're a this and you're a that. But naturally, each one of us will manifest those propensities. I've discussed this with many people. They probably should not know, so I often discuss this point. You know, we like to study the scriptures, we like to teach and preach, but at the same time, we also like to do management. We also like to keep an eye on money as well. So he says, I don't know what I am. I can't work out whether I'm a Brahma, a Vaishya, a Sudra, a Kshatriya. Can't work it out. Exactly, right? I mean,
yeah.
Can't cookie cutter everybody there. So Prabhupada very much encouraged the recognition of the different propensities of people, but then naturally just encourage what you can do well for Krishna. That's the key. The key bit is do it for Krishna.
On the subject of not being able to figure out what you are and where you fit in neatly, it is. It's a broad spectrum. And there's a couple of examples. Dronacharya, for example. What's he?
Brahma.
Is he, or is he a Kshatriya?
He was a Brahmin of the Dora Kshatriya art.
Yeah. But look at who he married. Who was he attracted to marry? He married Kripi, the twin sister of Kripacharya.
Yeah.
who was a Kshatriya woman. There's another thing is like, you know, the kind of woman that you or man that you're attracted to also gives you some idea of what you're about, because you're attracted to a compatible person. So, and what about Yudhisthira? What was he? Yeah, see? He, when the other Pandavas were all sharpening their weapons and practicing their archery, he was off talking with sannyasis and brahmanas, you know, discussing Vedanta. So, yeah, it's not always exactly clear-cut because, you know, we our body's a unique composition of the three modes, and so it falls somewhere in this vast three-dimensional space, and we just arbitrarily kind of divide things up. But at the end of the day, each person has a unique contribution, as Prabhu was explaining. I think Prabhu had put his hand up before you.
Well, there's an old saying, a common saying, that water sticks at the same level.
Mm.
So as much as we encourage everyone to come to a similar level in devotional service, you'll find that the devotees stay long-term. They do drift into what we call avana. Their administrative capacity manifests, their vaisha capacity manifests.
Mm.
And I was listening to one of our sannyasis teaching, you saying, what is that thing you cannot live without? What is that thing you can't stop yourself doing on a daily basis? He said, look at that closely and you'll see what your bar is. If you can't help yourself to clean something every day, if you can't help yourself to do some administration every day, if you can't stop yourself looking around at opportunities to make money, or you can't stop yourself preaching to people and elevating them in Christian consciousness, then you'll figure out whether you're a brahmana, whether you're a vaishya, whether you're suitable, whether you're attached by nature.
Mm.
So everyone's encouraged to advance in devotional service and become Vaishnava. At the same time, you cannot deny your natural capacity. And Prabhupada also said that something which is done artificially cannot be successful. So as a devotee, if you're trying to be a Brahmana, but you don't really have a complete Brahmana capacity, you won't be successful in the devotional service, and you've seen that over time. If people are not properly situated, they fall down.
Mm.
Why is that? Well, there's two reasons. One, they don't follow Prabhupada's recipe for success, which is that it diminishes progress. And the other thing is they're not properly situated.
I know what you're referring to.
If you don't engage your practical nature,
mm.
as well as practice, you know, what's it called? If you're not engaged in your propensity in a practical way, then you cannot be successful.
There was a conversation with Prabhupada, and he said why they should artificially try to become something they're not and then fall down and become a ludicrous. Yeah, that's what he said. He said why they should artificially try to become something and then fall down and become a ludicrous. Any other approval?
The beauty of Krishna consciousness is that when you're in your kirtan, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, isn't it?
Everyone is jumping up and down, it's very old. Forget about Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra.
Completely transcend the whole thing.
All that stuff, just trying to make Krishna have a good time.
Mm.
That's the essence of what all actually Krishna servants and each one which has a part to play. Chanting Hare Krishna, it all dissolves into just nothing.
Loving exchanges in the kirtan. Okay, Triyuga Prabhu?
Just a simple way of understanding that Bhakti Vijayapurna Swami speaks about, he said, yeah, everybody does the morning program, the evening program, period. That's the idea. And, you know, that's Brahminical, that's Vaishnava.
Mm.
And then what you do between 9 and 5, naturally, then that's the other part of the equation, that's the.
That's
your service.
Yeah,
that's your service.
That's your service.
Dave?
I like Andrew's comment about when you're in a kirtan, it doesn't matter.
Because
that's true. The three austerities of this age is chanting, dancing, and feasting. We have to go to the vegetable company.
I'm exhausted after the last 2 days.
Chanting, dancing, feasting, ki! Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam, ki jai!